Joseph.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
And welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is Andrew Horowitz, your host of the Disciplined Investor. And this is episode one number, let's see, we got 130. And it is coming on the home stretch here for the final quarter of 2009. Who would have thought we'd be where we are today if we thought back to where we thought we'd be looking at the long term back in January, February, and March? Already we've seen some amazing things happen over this year. Incredible amounts of spending that have gone on, stock markets that have fallen and have just popped up. We'll talk a little bit about some of the things that we see on an economic front, plus some stocks, hopefully, from my friend and yours, one of the most requested, truly is the most requested individual on this podcast. That's Frank Curzio. We try to get him on every month or so, and he'll tell you about where he is because I got a lot of emails that come in all the time asking, where in the world is Frank Curzio, since he left TheStreet.com's Real Money, I think it was The Real Story, The Real Something or Other podcast. You know, he has been now relocated. He's in Baltimore at Stansberry & Associates, writing a Stocks Under 10 newsletter that will be launched very, very shortly. They've been involved in all sorts of things. We'll talk to him about that a little bit later. But also what I want to talk to you about is a couple of stocks today, some ideas I have for you, also about some of the economics. You know, it's interesting because we've received a lot of emails over the last few weeks saying that, you know, we really like to look at the economics. That's great. We really like to look at the outlook. That's great. We really enjoy when you tell us how you found a stock or a sector or something of that nature and then, you know, bring it out on an educational level. So one of the things I want to mention to you is that if you haven't done so already, The Winning Investor is a podcast that I do. It's a kind of a back to basics, you know, what's a PE ratio, how to hedge a portfolio, what's an option, what's a covered call. And we do that on the Quick and Dirty Tips Network. It's available on iTunes. And if you just go to our site or quickanddirtytips.com, you'll find that. And that's kind of something that I think you'll enjoy very much if you are more to the beginner of an investor. For those of you that want to hear more politics, discussion about things like economics, Ponzi schemes, things of that, of course, check out DH Unplugged, where myself and John C. Dvorak do a podcast as well, and I think you'll very much enjoy that. That's a kind of an open mic discussion where you're listening into like a conversation we're having. There's really nothing pre-planned, but I got to tell you something. We don't stop talking. He is such a smart guy, John C. Dvorak, known very well in the technology area, but also well known in, I guess, the business of technology. So we talk about that a lot. He's on the Twit Network as a regular with Leo Laporte, and which I sometimes frequent. And I think that that's something you'll much enjoy. If you haven't listened to that, I really encourage you to subscribe to that. You can go to dhunplugged.com or simply go to iTunes and check it out there. So what I want to talk to you about, a couple of things. You know, first of all, we have a sponsor, and I'm going to kind of talk to you about that today. Here, get my little piece of paper on my notes. You know, I don't know about you, but yeah, we all have laptops and we have, you know, our iPhones or our Blackberries or our Symbians or our new HTC. I don't know if you've seen those new HTCs with the new Microsoft operating system. They're actually out. Also, the Android system is out. But interesting this week, side note, that Microsoft announced, I think, 11 different models for different carriers, all the different carriers, with their latest OS for mobile, which is kind of cool. Now, I understand it's an interim step, but one of the things that we're going to be doing is upgrading that. And that and Walt Mossberg's recent recommendation and rave review of the Windows 7 that is going to be released very shortly really pumped the stock up of late. That's one of our larger holdings. We bought that and sold that several times, but we hold Microsoft in our portfolio. Kind of a, you know, the redheaded stepchild of maybe of Apple, and kind of people are, you know, it's not as sexy and much more of the Volvo of OS's, the square boxy thing, rather than the cool, sleek BMW, which is the Apple, I guess. But nonetheless, either way, anything that you have, you know, a lot of times we, you know, we have an office, we have a home, and all the things that you need are on your computer. And it's difficult sometimes to work from another location. You have to copy files, you have to email documents to yourself, or sync up a laptop. And I mean, it's just a hassle. No matter what gadget you have, what app you have, oftentimes it's a hassle. So what we do is we use GoToMyPC to remotely access our computer from any computer. All you need to do is really just have an internet connection, wireless or wired. You can use any program, work on any file, check emails, access network resources, easy setup. So we have really just a special thing, and they are a supporter of the show. So I'd like you to go check out GoToMyPC. You can get it free for 30 days. That's a month unlimited remote access for free. So for the special offer, you must go to www.gotomypc/podcast. It's actually gotomypc.com/podcast, and you can get a free trial. So that's pretty cool. So what I want to talk to you about was some stocks and how we found this particular one. I think you'll be very interested in this. And what we know is, I think we know from a broad-based approach to, and logical approach to technology, that there is a growing need for infrastructure development around the world for the mobile phone applications, for data messaging. And as a matter of fact, a recent study came out this week that said, I think over the last three years, that the AT&T data network has increased their volume of data over the network by 5,000%. That's just unbelievable. And interestingly enough, that I think that we all know that this area is just going to continue to grow. Why? Well, people are giving up their home phones. We know that. We know that WiMAX or some kind of formation of that is much more mobile and usable. And we want to have internet everywhere. And I mean everywhere. My son was on the Hampton Jitney this summer in New York. You know about this probably. You go from Manhattan or some places that in Long Island and New Jersey, and you go out to the Hamptons. There's wireless on the bus. There's wireless on airlines right now. There's wireless clearly on ships through satellite, et cetera. But it's getting more and more accessible. As it's happening, we're having this crave and this desire for more and more speed and to upgrade the networks. Many of the networks these days, especially in the U.S., need to be upgraded to the next level. Right now, 3G primarily is what we have here. There's some 4G starting to hint in a little bit. There's other network configurations as well for all you techies out there. You know about them, whether it's the CDMA or the other ones out there that will carry single line, just data, or voice at the same time, or a combination, clearly. And obviously, most people want the combination plan where they can listen to both or text and talk at the same time. I'm not sure how that's really possible. And as a matter of fact, I don't know if you saw this, sorry to digress, but in Pembroke Pines, Florida, not too far from me, they outlawed texting while driving, which I think is really smart. I mean, it's hard to text while driving. I know this because I do this. And I also know that I've seen the studies that show how, you know, when you're texting, it takes you an extra half a second if you have to look up and see what's happening. That half a second at 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 miles an hour can be very, very dangerous. You know, somebody stops in front of you. Now, so with this thesis in mind, we went out and we did a screen. We wanted to find, okay, who's in the area of the wireless equipment, the telecom area that trades at least, let's say, 500,000 shares a day. You know, this is that Tekna, the Quanta Fund to Tekna process we use, the quantitative, where we do screening. When we look for stocks for our clients, we do a screen and we try to find, okay, where is a certain sweet spot? Who are the leaders in this area? So we found a variety of different stocks, and we said, okay, so we want to find those quality ones in the bubble to the top, and we want to find it in this sector. We want to have, let's say, a return on equity over, let's say, 20%. We want to have possibly a PEG ratio that's under 1. We want to have low debt. All these things we want to find, right? Well, we found a few of them. One of the ones that stood out to us, we've invested a couple different times in and out of. It's called Starent Networks, STAR. You may have heard about them before. They basically manufacture wireless infrastructure equipment that is used by the wireless and mobile companies that can, so they can deliver a variety of different services, including of voice and multimedia, and give you that the next generation of application delivery, if you will. So now what's happening here is, and when you look at this stock, I want to share with you some of the things that really caught our eye about this. I'm going to tell you the positives. I'm going to tell you the negatives. I don't know if I said it before, but the symbol is STAR. Okay, so now what we found was that the P/E ratio for tech companies 28, but in a on its own, a P/E ratio is just something you compare and look at other things to see if it's a quality company. But when we like to look at it in a relative basis and a more critical base, we look at it when we compare it to its long-term growth rate, which is about 188%. Okay, the outlook is about 188%. Now, clearly, we've seen the company start to slow down a little bit in this downdraft, okay, what we saw last year, et cetera. Relatively new company, around since 07, by the way. And the company's growth rate is really good. The return on equity, we like to see that. That's kind of the over 20 is always, a company that's really providing good returns. And we could say that the amount of the benefit of the internal operations is good and high enough. So 20 we try to look for. These days it's a little bit tougher to find those, but 24 in this one. They have $1.17 of cash flow per share. No debt. Okay, no debt. That's important. They have a book value. It's about 5.8 times. A little bit hot. That's good. We like that. We definitely like the book value at that level. We have also, what's interesting, is that we're finding that the number of funds and institutions that are buying this are up on a regular basis over the last number of years. Okay, that's good. So all these things are good. And that's the fundamentals. We have other things that we can look at. We can look at what's happening on an EPS on a quarter-by-quarter basis. They've been growing regularly. They start to slow down recently. That could be expected. But their sales have been increasing from about $36 million back in September to $78 million. This is quarterly, by the way. Quarterly in June of 2009, $78 million per quarter. Company's a little bit small, not a big company. We'll call it a mid-cap, about a $2 billion overall market capitalization, and it trades about 1.5 million shares per day, million and a half shares a day. Short interest is about a coverage of about 4.6 days. In other words, about 2% of the overall shares that are in float are actually held short. So if there's a short squeeze on this thing, it may move dramatically. Let me tell you some of the things that we have a problem with in terms of, when we're trying to be critical about this and find something that's wrong with this. I mentioned that the sales are slowing ever so slightly. Sales are growing, but the sales growth is slowing. The EPS growth is slowing ever so slightly. There's some insider trading going on. In other words, I don't mean that negatively, but the insiders are selling shares. They really haven't been buying, and they're doing this kind of regularly over the last couple of years. Now, this could be that it's a newer company, and people are cashing out over a regular process. It could be something different. But, we are seeing a very regular flow of sales. But again, I don't think that's that negative because the shares have been going up during that time. Now, when you look at this stock, and one of the things I like to look at is what does the chart look like? And we like to look at this in a couple different ways. We want to look at this both in a way, if you could pull up a chart of this on a daily basis somewhere, whether it's Google or Yahoo or MSN or you can look at FinViz, whatever you want to look at. But let's look at the daily for a second, and I want to show you something. On the daily chart here, okay, the daily chart is kind of an interesting one. It's been riding its 50-day moving average pretty well, staying pretty well above that. Every time it knocks down, it kind of comes down a little bit and then pulls right back up. And then when it does bounce off it bounced nicely. So if you see that, it's been a very nice trend. It's staying right on its trend line. If you connect all the lows, if you go back to, let's say, November of 08 and back about $7.50, and you start connecting all the lows, it's pretty much been staying on trend. It had a little bit of a hiccup, I think, when with some sales of the insiders were selling back in August and September. If you see that, it went down to about 19.5 right there. And if you look at the top line, if you look at the higher highs it's been building, it's, again, within that range that if you can draw both lines across. It also has a good magnet towards its 20-day, if you look at that, and it's well above its 200-day. 200-day is sloping up. The 50-day has been flattening, but now it's starting to slope up, and its 20-day recently is coming up nicely. So all these things are good in terms of a chart that shows a trend. Now, I want you to switch over for a second and look at something. I'm going to go back and forth. Try to look at a weekly chart now for a second. And I'll put these charts on the website if you can. Go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, look at the show notes for this, and I'll have two charts up there. We'll put the daily, and we'll put the weekly on there as well, so you can see that. But on a weekly now, I want you to look at this, back to beginning, back when they started, back in June of 07. But we have this interesting kind of a development here. we're seeing that there was a lot of selling going on clearly through December of 8 when technology bottomed, okay? And then when it broke through, finally broke through its 50, and the 50 broke through the 200, the golden cross there, this thing just took off and didn't stop, has been riding its 50 the whole time. What's happening right now is that we're reaching the peak. It almost looks to me like we're seeing a lot of the players that kind of get washed out of the recent getting washed out, and we started to finally break above that $26 level. See what that is? And you can see that that's over where there's been some resistance. There's been significant resistance. We just broke through there. Now, the question remains, where does it go from here? Well, if it breaks above about the next level, about right below $30 or about 28 and a half, this thing can start moving pretty nicely, because it's really going to start and set up for the next level of move. Now, clearly, it is very, very responsive to what's happening in the overall technology market, the NASDAQ, et cetera, and it has some volatility in there, the stock. But if you look at both the weekly and then switch back to the daily and look at the daily, that 2708, which was the top back in July, and then it came down back to the 19, and then it broke above. Again, we're sitting right now on this really important line of resistance. It just broke above the main resistance at 25 and a half, 26, and it's somewhere about $27, $28, depending where you look at it at the end here. And basically, this is an interesting setup on a technical level. There could be a better entry point possibly than here, but right now it looks like this stock is starting to get towards the point of either it's going to break out right now or go sideways for a while and kind of get, depending on what happens. But I think that the overall thesis on this stock, where we started off, is excellent. I think the overall fundamentals of the stock are excellent. And now the chart is setting up really nicely. So check this out. This is a technology stock. It's something that can be very interesting for the short run. And you have to set up, of course, you have to set up your stops. You know, we move in and out of this. This thing starts dropping down. We're out, but we'll come right back in if it makes sense for us, if it starts bouncing off certain levels. So there's a lesson, a little Quanta Funda Tecna on Starent. There's a few others that I gave you before. Asia, Meli. We moved out of Meli after the earnings came out, came down. We just couldn't get back in. And I hope you bought that, because that is just moving up very nicely. Asia, we got out towards the top. That's another telecom play over in China. And if you look at some of the Chinese stocks like NetEase, Shanda, who else is there? Sina, Baidu, a couple others. Shanda had a public offering. We moved out before the thing really started crashing down. It was one of the biggest offerings, but I got to tell you something, they got greedy. Take a look at the symbol GAME. This was the spinoff of Shanda, SNDA. And what happened there is we rode that way up, and it was great. But then what happened was that when the IPO came out, the spinoff from GAME, it looked like it was going to be good. But the last minute, they increased the price to the top line at the highest they can go, and they increased the offering by about 30%, I believe it was. And that was their downfall. They pushed out too much supply. And Goldman Sachs, who was the lead on this, they were just too greedy, and unfortunately, the investors got pissed off. One of the biggest IPOs of the year, one of the biggest flops so far. It's down since the IPO. Most of the time, you see IPOs oftentimes trade above because the underwriter looks for the opportunity to find the sweet spot. This, they got greedy on, and shame on you, fellas. You know what? We're not just all sitting out here being stupid just to suck up all of the production that you have in terms of shares and the supply that you have. That's not our job. Our job is to invest in good things, be disciplined, and I hope you didn't get involved in that right now. There may be opportunity to get in there in the future, but right now we need to let this wash out and let the players just sell their positions and then kind of see what happens moving forward. But right now, this is a real bust. It seems like it was a real benefit to Shanda, real benefit to the underwriters, but the investors got screwed, but good. So be careful with those IPOs that are coming out, because on this, primaries and secondaries, a lot of dilution going on right now. All right, what else did I want to talk to you about? Let's see. Economics real quickly. We saw and earnings real quickly first. Alcoa came out, interesting. That was great. Good numbers, although they seemed to do a turnaround. They were up about 8% midday, and then they came down to about flat by the end of the day when their earnings came out the day after. Kind of interesting, almost the same, a repeat of the same thing that happened last quarter when Alcoa came out with numbers, beat the estimates. But this time they actually came out positive. They actually came out with a profit over a loss. Very interesting. Actually beat both top and bottom line. and it surprised the markets around the world. We saw commodities going up like crazy, and the setup was amazing between Australia last week of actually hiking rates and showing that they have some real opportunity there, and combining that with another commodity that was doing well in another commodity company really pushed up Australian and the Asian shares, pushed up the Australian dollar, and the dollar in the U.S. got crushed again this week, which is amazing after the ride it had for, you know, just a couple of days, 3 days. It was looking like it was starting to level off there a little bit. But the quantitative easing and our government spending money increasing another, I believe it was 14 weeks of the unemployment benefit in all states now, increasing that, now saying that they are possibly doing a second non-stimulus. And unfortunately, we need these markets to heal, and we need to have them actually reset, not be keeping them having fed by the government continually, because that's just not, that's artificial. Unfortunately, it's a placebo. It's just temporary. We need to get real growth back here. And what they're doing is a very indirect methodology for doing so. So, you know my feeling on that. Anyway, when we get back in a moment, we're going to pick it up with Frank Curzio and spend some time with him. You're probably bored as can be with my voice by now, but hopefully we gave you some information that you could use on learning how to really pick out a good stock, and also something that you may want to look at and take a look at how we envisioned and what we found on that company, Starint. And otherwise, I think that we're going to move right on, and we'll be back in a second on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hang on. And we're back with our favorite guest of all, Frank Curzio. You know him. He's the guy that brings you stocks that are under $10 and does an amazing job. He is at Stansberry right now, riding along. And if you haven't tracked him, you need to. A lot of people have asked about, where is Frank, my good friend Frank? Where in the world is Waldo? Well, he's situated now in Baltimore, and he's riding his little fingers off. And Frank, you're one of our favorite guests. How you doing, buddy?
Good. How's everything?
Everything is really well, thank you. So what's going on? I mean, since we've talked with 5-6 weeks ago, we've seen a little bit of a kind of a change in the market environment. Some of the economics are looking a little less healthy than they were for a little while. But yet at the same time, we're seeing earnings doing really well, right?
Yeah, earnings are really going through the roof. I mean, we saw companies report Walgreens, Nike, Yum Brands, Alcoa, all companies that have managed to be mostly because of cost cutting. And, you know, I think a lot of people out there, a lot of analysts and even the bears and the bulls are underestimating how much these companies could actually cut. And I think that, you know, even just look at your own situation where, I mean, how hard are you working today than you were last year, the year before, where they're pushing so much more work on you, and you have to do it because, you know, the guy behind you doesn't have a job is definitely going to come in and take it. So they're getting, well, I don't want to say the same amount of productivity, but productivity is up, and they're able to cut costs. And, you know, as we all know, sales are down, and we're not really seeing that demand on the sales end. But as far as earnings go, I think this quarter and next quarter are going to easily beat estimates.
Now, on some of these earnings, are there any one-timers? I mean, for example, how do we calculate cash for clunkers into an Alcoa earnings, for example? Or how do we calculate the swine flu shots into the Walgreens numbers?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I mean, the best way to do it is really listen to the conference calls. I don't think the swine flu is going to make a major impact with some of the larger, huge pharmaceuticals. It's kind of like saying, GE sold a lot of refrigerators when, you know, most of the income comes from, financials and infrastructure.
Right.
But as far as the cash for clunkers plan, it's amazing how you saw the huge drop-off. And just to go to the economic part again, I think that's the reason we're going to extend the tax credit for housing, because we saw such a huge drop-off. We can't afford to see that drop-off in housing, and you're going to see it if they remove that tax credit.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to extend, and they're probably going to announce that in the next couple of weeks as it extends in November.
Well, they'll extend that. They'll extend that. They'll extend the also, it looks like there's at least talk about extending the unemployment claim insurance, you know?
And in some states, 79 weeks. 79 weeks almost pays not to get a job. I mean, it's unbelievable, but it just shows, and I understand for the people that are struggling, they can't find a job, that's fine, but a lot of people, even a lot of people that happen to know, really take advantage of that, and it's unfortunate where, you know, the government continues to spend, and that's what we're seeing here, where you know, people looking at their technical indicators and saying this market's overvalued and overbought, and you're looking at fundamentals, it doesn't make sense, but you know, you look at where earnings are and how the less bad thesis, and everybody hates it, we're going to continue to get less bad on the economic front. We may even see non-farm payrolls tick on the positive in early 2010. And, you know, we're going to see unemployment rate at 10%, but these less bad statistics, you have to pay attention because that's what's moving the markets. Whether you like it or not, The less bad scenario is moving the markets.
Well, what I've always talked about is this whole idea of, as I call it at least, consumption cannibalism. Have you heard me talk about this?
I heard you talk about it, and I also read about it.
Yeah, so what I think is going on is going to be, as I think you've talked about, is one of the big benefits to the companies right now is that they're boosting up their earnings, obviously, dramatically because of the layoffs, and you know they're continuing to do so as much as possible. And we see that from the non-farm payrolls last month when there was supposed to be 175 and it was 250, and a lot of that was the governments, the local government, state, municipalities, et cetera, you know, firing and all that because they don't have the tax revenues and they don't have the opportunity right now to make any money back, you know, because of what's going on. And at the same time, you have to say, well, okay, if that benefits the companies, what happens to consumption if all these people are out of work for some time? And when does that, bite you in the backside, or does it?
It is going to bite you in the backside, but I just think that it's not going to happen soon. I think it's going to happen later.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was looking at Goldman Sachs numbers, and the reason why I quote them is because I don't know how they do it, but they know everything over the past 4 months when it's going to happen. Just like when they raised the job number to 250 the day before, and it came out almost on a head.
Right.
But they're expecting, and they're optimistic. They're one of the most optimistic firms out there in the sell side and institutions. They're expecting 10% unemployment, the average 10% unemployment for 2010. So if you think about that, I mean, we just had stress tests. How long ago was that? Maybe 12 months ago. Where their worst case scenario for unemployment was 10%.
So that was 6 months. It was like 5 months ago, by the way.
Yeah, it wasn't that quick.
It was like March.
March. It was 7 months ago. All right.
No, it wasn't even March. It may have been even April because that's when they started. Yeah, it was April or May or something like that. When the markets were starting to come back and the banks are coming back.
Isn't it amazing how much stuff is? I mean, it feels like this is it's such a long time, but March was just like the other day. It just feels like it was so long ago, but. That's it. You know, those stress tests were conducted, and like you said, you know, a couple months ago, where, you know, 10% was the benchmark that they used, and now it looks like we're going to come higher than that. And based on the conference calls that I'm listening to, and based on the huge costs, I mean, you look at Walgreens, they're looking to cut costs by $1 billion in 2011. I think there's going to be a huge amount of layoffs. I think it's going to hit the market later, though. I don't think it's going to hit short term because you're going to see, there's one thing, there's one catalyst, and we talked about the money on the sidelines, $3.5 trillion, but that money's been on the sidelines earning no interest, and you have to look at it from a money manager's perspective. Put away the fundamentals, put away the technicals, where they're missing this market big time, and you know what? Everybody that I know, even the bears, the biggest bears, are looking to buy this market in a pullback,
mm-hmm.
and that means every time the market comes down, you see it jump right back up again. There's a lot of money in the sidelines that has to come into this market. Otherwise, some of these guys who manage this money are going to wind up losing their job.
I suppose. But, you know, at the same time, you know, that's not the best way to invest. Now, I'm not saying anything about this market. I'm just saying that's a really poor rationale for investing.
I agree with you 100%. But, I think we both agree how bad things are going to be later. And you know, I think this is the biggest bear market rally in our history. And it's going to go even higher, but it's going to go higher in the short term. But it's tough to invest like that, but I think it's important for people to understand, looking at the fundamentals and technicals, on why the hell does this market keep going up? There's reasons why it's going up, and it's unfortunate because it's not the traditional reasons, because the government keeps spending money. They're going to continue to spend money. There was rumors, I think a Bloomberg story, I think you sent to me, a few days ago where they're going to announce another stimulus plan.
No, let's clarify that for a second, okay? It is tax cuts and other plays to get money into the pockets and help the unemployment without being stimulus. It's a non-stimulus stimulus. That's pretty funny.
It's like raising the cost of health care, but it's not a tax.
Right, it's not going to cost you anything.
It's not a tax.
Right, the cost is going up, but it's not going to cost you anything. Exactly. So listen, Frank, you write this. You recently wrote, what was the last stock that you covered in your Stansberry newsletter? Which was the one that you sent out on?
Kenneth Cole was the first one I sent out. It's had a good price. It's been, like all in the 10 stocks in the last 2 weeks. There was three different days where it was up or down 8%.
Wow.
On no news, which is interesting. But I do like it long term. I think just because they were late to the party in cutting costs. They have a couple catalysts, new line of women's shoes that are coming out that were, women really make a big deal about a certain product, but they were featured on like ABC News, and you know, it was a really big deal. So we're going to see how those sales are going forward.
So Frank, you're a shoe guy, huh?
I know, right? Well, no, you got to see working and what trends are working.
Exactly.
But another company too is Take Two. Recommended it, I believe, with you a while ago.
Yeah, we talked about it.
And I think that that company is, within the next 6 months, I think that company is going to get bought by Electronic Arts for over $18 a share. It's trading around $11 right now. I really think that the earnings growth over the next 2 years is a compliment to anybody in the industry, because a lot of those companies are struggling for earnings right now and growth that time period. And Take Two, because they lag so much and push so many titles out to 2010, 2011, those earnings are going to be a real compliment, that growth to a number of firms. But there's one other product, too, and I think if Obama does go ahead with this stimulus, it's called Mueller Water Products. And I don't know if it's Mueller or Mueller. But
I think it's Mueller.
Mueller. And it's MWA. And they're a water infrastructure company. And I think, you know, we all know how bad that infrastructure in water is, and they haven't changed, you know, they haven't done anything in 2 decades. And that's been the thesis for everybody recommending the stock in the past, like, 2 years. And the reason why I stayed away is because I kind of wanted to see another catalyst, because the balance sheet wasn't that good. And it really isn't that good. But insiders were buying a little bit lower than the current price, and right now it's a little bit over 5. If it comes under 5, I kind of like it. I think the stimulus announcement, they're going to announce another stimulus because they're going to try to stimulate job growth. For some reason, I think a lot of it is going to go for infrastructure, and if it does, you're going to see a nice pop in this company. And they do produce and manufacture the products in the USA, and that's a must to get money from the stimulus. So I think it's in a sweet spot. I do not think it has a lot of downside risk, but it doesn't have a healthy balance sheet. Again, we talk about stocks under 10 here, and a lot of them have a lot of things wrong with them, obviously. But I think if it comes down a little bit low, I feel a little more comfortable that the insiders were buying. So, and they were buying pretty big. So I do like that company.
Well, what I'm looking at here is debt ratio about 82%, and I'm seeing decent cash flow, about $1.28 per share. Earnings are spotty at best, let's be honest, and kind of coming down. Sales have been growing, though, over the last couple of quarters. Came down from the last 2 years, of course, like everybody else. Funds are growing a bit that own them a lot, but they have some competition, like James Hardie. You know them?
No, I don't know them, but they have three different divisions, MWA. And one of the divisions, they really have limited competition. It's hard to enter that market. And their other divisions are really like pipe and stuff like that. They have a ton of competition, where whoever offers a lower price really gets the business. But their largest segment, I think, is going to do well. And again, the fundamentals aren't that great, but they improve. They will raise money. And I think going forward, when you see that amount of debt, you want to look at their debt covenants. And they're not going to offset their debt covenant, at least in the next 12 months. So I'm not really worried. I did the analysis on the debt. So you don't have to worry about the debt in terms of them having liquidity problems over the next 12 months. I think that the cash flow is enough where, you know, I think this company could really grow. And if they do turn around, when you see companies like this with bad balance sheets, when they turn around, they tend to pop and they go up tremendously. I mean, you saw Hertz and Avis and those companies. Once they turn that corner, they could really pop. So
I do see one thing that I want to ask you about, that back in September, there was a secondary, and it looks like two different secondaries they did. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. I know of one, but I thought they did one for $165 million.
And it's actually, the stock did well the day that they did that, which is interesting.
Because
so much
they need the
dilution.
Money, that's the thing.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's different when, actually, if you look at almost every single secondary, I think except the Sachs, the stock is trading a lot higher than when they offer the price. And you know, it seems like a good bet to get in some of those lately, which I don't really agree with, but it just seems like even Take Two raised money like $8, and I thought they were crazy at the time the stock's at 11.
Right. And short interest is pretty high on this, which is, it's about a 1 day to cover, so that's not a big deal on this. Mm-hmm. And that actually could be helpful. And they have infrastructure, flow control products for water distribution, wastewater, gas, and fire. So this will probably go in two things, right? So you mentioned that, I guess, that it would be good for if stimulus came. But the second thing would probably be if, in fact, I guess housing too, right? Housing
It is a play on residential housing, and I'm not, you know how I feel about that. I've done the show a lot of times saying I'm not too crazy about it. But I do think we're near the bottom of the cycle here. And it's mostly a play on an infrastructure where a lot of money was already dedicated towards this, and it hasn't really hit MWA yet. So if there's another stimulus package, and I think if we're really going to focus on this, I think that this company will benefit.
Hmm. Interesting. So let's go back, because a lot of people have asked me, you know, what they like to see is, you know, how someone does their research. You know, a lot of people do market calls. They say, okay, yeah, the market's going to be up, down, whatever it's going to be. So we talk a little bit about that. We talk about the economics. We talk about a couple of the stocks that you like here. But let's kind of back up for a second and talk about in this environment, you're definitely looking at things differently than you had, let's say, 3 years ago, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you still like things long term. And you also like, I know that sometimes you want to make, you know, wait for things to come back and come back into a decent price after they run out up maybe. But what is how do you start out your research? What are you doing? I mean, like we know that you like the lower price stocks, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But kind of where are you going to find your best ideas?
Well, a lot of times I'll do different screens of the largest companies in the S&P 500 that trade under 10, the ones that have come down the furthest from price, just to get a list of sometimes 30, 40, 50 companies and maybe pick a few out. Also, through my services, there's news coming out on stocks every single day. And you know, when the under 10 stocks come in, you know, I'll look to see. I'll see the upgrades and downgrades when they come out. And that's how I get new ideas where you know, sometimes these are stocks that I've been heard of, and I'll see a company upgrade them or downgrade them, and I'll find out the reason why, and maybe there's another competitor that's under 10. So there's different ways to find out. You know, you can do your simple screen of under 10 stocks in any single screening service that you have and find a whole bunch of them. But I think I tend to look for companies that have been beaten up, because a lot of these have been, which are under 10, and the reasons why they're beaten up. Now, let me give you an example. Sprint is a company I was looking at. And mm-hmm. Sprint, I used to be a Sprint customer, and I thought it was horrible. But the reason why
you know what their motto is, right? They say they're not happy until you're not happy. Right?
No, that's great. I like it. You call me off guard. You're like, you know what their model is. I'm like, okay.
Sprint has good coverage. They have really bad hardware. That's the problem.
Well, here's the thing with Sprint. They had horrible customer service. They had huge debt issues. You know, there was rumors that T-Mobile, you know, Deutsche Telekom parent was going to take them over. But, you know, the synergies, it might be difficult to, you know, especially if it's a Nextel. Nextel was a disaster. They had to write off the whole Nextel takeover, which was $35 billion. They wrote off about $30 billion. So the stock was actually terrible. The customer service, they're actually ranked higher than AT&T. Not too difficult. I know a lot of people have the iPhone understand that. But, you know, and other problems is their debt. Well, they're increasing cash flow tremendously. Actually, they have $1.5 billion in cash flow. They have $21 billion in debt. A pretty scary number. They have $4.5 billion on the books. So if you look at their debt, they actually have enough based on cash flow and the amount of money they have to make their debt payments for the next 5 years. So right away, I look at this stock and say, okay, they're not going out of business. Like mm-hmm. that's the first thing I want to look at, because mm-hmm. I'm looking at downside risk. Every one of these companies has a story. You can look at them and say, okay, this one's going to go up. I look at the downside risk. Now, when I look at that, what other reasons why it was going down? Well, they really don't have any good phones, but you actually sent me something. Was it the HTC Hero?
Mm-hmm.
It's gotten unbelievable reviews.
Well, and just yesterday, it was actually a few days ago, there was announcements by Google and by Microsoft and by Verizon. There's a slew of new phones coming out on the, you know, primarily on the HTC, but on all the networks that are using the latest Microsoft software. It all looks like the iPhone these days, you know, with the touch screens and the pinching turning and all that. You have a little keyboard on some you don't have. But basically, you know, they're going to have app stores and all this. The Google, you know, Android phone is coming out and it's making a big play right now. Palm Pre, of course, is Sprint. You know, so they have that, but they also have this new product with Microsoft, which is really trying to do what they can to, you know, get a footprint in this area of a single device unit for music and for apps and for phone. HTCs are an excellent device, by the way, superb device. The question is, can they really, you know, make any kind of headway into the Apple market? And by the way, you know, most people think that the Apple is the number one OS when it comes to phones. You know what the number one OS is?
No.
It's Symbian. It's still the Symbian OS, which is primarily Nokia.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, by a huge market share. That's the old-fashioned kind of, you know, regular smart, not the touchscreen smartphones, but the old-fashioned smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could basically get on the web and all that. You know, the flip phones and all that have that.
Yeah.
That's a Symbian.
Yeah.
That's the number one. I think it's a 50% share or some ridiculous number.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. But, you know, so, I mean, that's going to be eaten away over time. But I think that I agree with you that if we see alternative units for the carrier, is going to do two things. Number one, it's going to start opening up things by Apple. Already AT&T last week mentioned that they were going to allow for I don't know if you saw this, but they're going to allow for the voice over IP like Skype and a few others to actually run on their 3G network, which I thought was interesting. And now we have to see if Apple, because they're being looked into by a couple of different courts about their not allowing the Google Voice application to be used on the iPhone. And there was a question, why was that? And they said, well, there was a glitch and all that. But the question remains, you know, what do you have to buy minutes from AT&T for if you can use these devices through their, you know, just use the data plan?
Yeah.
I mean, so that's kind of interesting. What's going to end up happening is going to increase it. One of the statistics I recently heard, in the last, I think it was 3 years, the data flow on the AT&T network has increased by 5,000%.
Yeah, no surprise there.
That's unbelievable. And that's just, and by the way, that's just for my kids. Right?
Yeah, I know. I can't wait for my daughter to be a part of that team.
Yeah, they just have to. They have new languages, and then they just use their thumbs to type everything. But quickly, I know you got
like you were saying. It just seems that where Sprint really had no phones, now they have the Pre, and you could debate whether sales are strong or not,
right,
and how they
right,
do the
right.
accounting and all that. That's Palm's problem. But you know, for a company that had really nothing, it seems like they really addressed the problems that pushed the stock price down. And more important, they have an asset that everybody wants. They have 50 million subscribers. Now, subscribers are hard to come by. I mean, you don't know anyone that doesn't have a cell phone anymore. So the fact that they have that many subscribers, even if the stock comes down, I think you're going to see other companies interested in buying. I don't think you're going to see AT&T, Verizon, because they'll have regulatory issues, but you could see T-Mobile really come in the market if the stock comes down, which, again, gives you limited downside risk, since you really don't have to worry about the debt. That's not going to be an issue for the next 5 years. So is it a good buy? I mean, it's not a strong buy. I don't see the company going up 200%, but I kind of like it, especially if it comes down like another 10%. I think Sprint's a pretty good company.
Yeah, I mean,
and you're talking, and I'm telling you that from a customer who was terrible. And I put that aside. You know, I'm a customer, and I thought the service was terrible. Everything's terrible. I'm no longer a customer. But, you know, you have to put that aside and put my personal feelings aside. I think from what I hear, what customers said, they address that. You know, J.D. Power just gave them a very high-ranking customer service. And it's very important because that's how come they're losing so many subscribers.
Yeah, well, I mean, these days, we saw Mosaic earnings come out this week also that were abysmal. I mean, are horrifying. I mean, 92% reduction in their overall earnings from the last year.
The whole industry.
Yep.
The whole industry.
And the stock went up. Potash went up. We had a nice short. We shorted Potash at 97. We covered it about 88, I believe it was. Or 87.5, something like that. But I think it went down to as low as maybe 86.
Well, I have to mention, like I mentioned to you with Mosaic, though, there's one difference, though, that at least that company, it was coming down a lot into that report.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
When they reported,
right.
You know, it was flat. It came up a little bit where, you know, remember we were seeing Caterpillar who's saying, listen, things are horrible. We're dead. And then the stock was running up into that report, and it ran up after the CEO said, listen, we're moving guidance, things are tight. You know, that's when things get really crazy. And there's a lot of overvalued, crazy stocks out there, especially, you know, under 10 that went up 300%, 400% that I really think are worthless. I mean, even the AIG is going back up to 50 now. Yeah, even had somebody actually came out and initiated coverage. How do you initiate a coverage on AIG? How the hell do you understand that freaking company?
It's impossible.
I'm going to read that report, actually.
It's impossible. Same thing with Fannie Mae.
I'm going to read that report to see exactly what that guy
I got to tell you something.
I'm curious as hell.
I got to tell you something. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and AIG, and there's probably a few others, should not be trading. I know it's fun,
no,
but
they should not
be on the market. They should be closed down. They have no business being on the market at all, and that's just absolutely ridiculous.
AIG could be worthless tomorrow.
Yeah.
If the government decides to take them, I mean, they own 80% of the company. It'd be worthless tomorrow.
Right.
Yeah, people love it, and plus I hear people tell me all the time, I made so much money in AIG, and you know, it's frustrating from our point of view, we do the analysis where, you know, it's kind of meaningless with
people
making money. But, you know, it's difficult market conditions. I think you're going to see, you know, a little bit of correction of some of those high flyers soon.
I hear you. Listen, we've seen the housing market, housing stocks are down 10, 12, 15% in the recent, like, month or so.
Under the radar,
yeah. Yeah, it's under the radar because it's kind of like, you know, over the last few weeks, we saw the markets dip down 4% or so, then they came back about 3% or 2.5%, 3%, 4%, something like that. And, you know, so again, you got to look at that because what happened was that the banks started upgrading the banks. One of the best upgrades I've ever seen was almost an indirect self-upgrade of Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs upgraded all the large banks. Doesn't that indirectly upgrade Goldman?
Yes, instead of best, yeah.
I mean, they kind of like said, hey, you know, we're going to upgrade the banks.
I tell you, Andrew, housing's playing right into my thesis from like 6 months ago. I said that with all what the government's doing with the $8,000 tax credit, with you know, low home prices, low interest rates, you're going to see a jump up in the housing. It's very bearish for a long time. Then I became a little bit bullish and said it's going to cause all these people to come in and say, we finally hit a bottom in housing, I think there's going to be a huge another leg to drop. And I think we're starting to see that now where it's not subprime and Alt-A anymore. It's prime loans. People mm-hmm. with regular jobs have friends in Long Island. Their household income is about $120,000 each. They're both looking to move someplace else because they can't afford to live there.
Well, they raise taxes up there. It's crazy.
It's too expensive for them.
And but vacancy rates in New York are the highest they've been in I don't even know what the number is. And the rents are coming down dramatically. So, as a matter of fact, MGM just cut their rents on their City Center property in Las Vegas by about 30%. It pushed the stock up a little bit because people were reneging on all the deals and they weren't getting any kind of occupancy, even though people put down deposits. They just said, you know what, we're not doing this at those prices that they bought in 2006, 2007.
So, well, I think it's funny because I actually, there's another analyst in Stansbury where I worked that wrote about this. It said that, you know, it's funny because they're cutting prices by 30%, yet the real estate market's down like 50%.
Right, exactly.
They're probably still not selling
exactly.
in Vegas. But what's funny with the casino companies, which I love, is that they always build so much at the top, like the City Center. And now, just recently, I think also in that announcement, you have companies like MGM saying, you know what, well, we're not going to build in Vegas for another 10 years. Prices are at their lowest levels, and how long? Why wouldn't you be building now and
right.
selling then? And it just goes to show you that, you know, they say that that's a problem with first-time investors. But, you know, even like the largest companies are doing the same thing. I would think there'd be more money going into construction now at these low prices.
No, why would you do that when you could buy stuff that's already built? It's kind of like buying a shell company.
Even the same thing. Like, you know, even buy things that are already built. Exactly. But it just seems like everyone's, you know, pulling back right now and saying, okay, we're not going to build anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just crazy where they're building a city project right at the top. And now it seems like they're getting conservative at the wrong time.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, I'm going to let you go, my friend. And I'm going to tell you that everybody who wants to find Frank, because it's been the big game of where is Frank? I get emails all the time, Frank. So
hey, cool.
He's at Stansbury, and I'm going to put a link on the Disciplined Investor podcast site. Go to show notes, and we'll have a link directly to him. Do you guys have like a free trial or something like that for your newsletters? How's that work?
Well, my newsletter is going to come out in about a month, and I know it's frustrating for a lot of people because, you know, I haven't wrote a newsletter in a while, but it's a big process. It's not just I can come out with stock picks. There's all marketing behind it. It's being beta tested. You know, all of my bonus reports are being written and everything. So it's going to be launched probably within a month by November 1st that we're trying for. And if anybody wants, you know, information on it, you can email me at curzio1@gmail.com or at fcurzio@stansburyresearch.com, and I'll gladly give you information.
All right, we'll put those links on there for you. Frank Curzio, you're a good man. Until the next time when you disappear into the green fog of the markets in Baltimore, we will touch base again and talk about markets and stocks under 10 and all that good stuff, buddy.
Thanks, Andrew.
Right,
you're good, okay, bud?
You're the best.
All right, take care.
Thanks, Frank. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, as always, Frank Curzio is terrific. What a great guy. Has a lot to talk about, has a lot to teach, and we'll make sure. I want to get my hands on his – I can't wait, actually, to get my hands on his first newsletter that he puts out of there because his work is so interesting. He has such an amazing way of delving into stocks and – you know, his family goes way back in the area of stock research. You know, his father does this as well. So, Frank Curzio, thank you very much for being there and being a great friend of the show. And I hope all of you, we got some great response, by the way, from the discussion with Das and Art Cashin and a few of the other guests we have. You have a guest that you want me to have, maybe that I haven't thought of yet, and we could probably get them. We have some great contacts out there, maybe somebody I haven't thought of. Just write to me, askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We'll have some more things coming up, some exciting things. I told you last week, we have that really neat program, that restructured program where you can actually buy the income streams of annuities. We're going to have the fellow that does that on in a few weeks, a couple of weeks, I think, explain it to you because a lot of interest came in when I mentioned that. I just mentioned it last week and a lot of interest came in. If you haven't checked that out and you want some information about that, just go to last week's episode if you can. Go to the show notes from last week. There's a little form on there or something, and we'll get the guys to send you out some information from that company. Cool stuff. In the meantime, we'll see you real soon. Thanks for joining me on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Have a great and a successful and a profitable week.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.